The next matter, number 22-1536, Lynn M. Sheridan et al. Versus Centara Group, LLC. At this time, would counsel for the appellants please introduce himself on the record to begin?
Yes, may it please the court, on behalf of the appellants, my name is Jose Arifado Diaz, co-counsel of Manuel Lopez Fernandez, who's on the court below, is not here present, but I'll be at bat for him as well. Your Honor, this case involves an ADA discrimination case involving a type 1 diabetic that used to be a security guard for Santana, who was a federal contractor in charge of the security in the, I believe it was a Coast Guard base over in Aguadilla, on the western side of the island. As fully addressed in our brief, this case presents various matters regarding the ADA involving the employer's duty to come forward and engage in the interactive dialogue in order to fashion a reasonable accommodation for X or Y employee. It also involves certain violations of the law that was committed by Santana. Particularly and most importantly, is the fact that as a result of his diabetic condition, Mr. Rios was required to monitor his blood glucose levels at certain amounts of times a day. And this was well known by the Mr. Captain Caraballo, who was the chief at the Santana outfit, and as well as his two supervisors. And he was afforded a private place to monitor his blood glucose at X amount of times a day. And allegedly, he was using this private rest area, which also included a bathroom. And when he came out of using the bathroom and also monitoring his blood sugar, one of his supervisors understood that he had been sleeping. And he admonished him, and he was claimed that he was in underwear. I don't know where it was, my shorts, changing, whatever.
Counsel?
Yes.
Could I ask you to just turn to the termination when
okay,
your client
sure,
lost
I'll,
his
yes,
job? One specific question that I had for you, because the brief talked about your client going into hypoglycemic shock,
yes, sure,
a serious condition, of course.
Yes.
But does the record reflect any evidence introduced by your client that is what happened, that he had a hypoglycemic shock? Because your opposing counsel says there is no such evidence in the record.
Well,
so could you just address that very specifically?
There is no, to answer your question, Your Honor, there is no medical evidence as to the fact that he went into a hypoglycemic shock. He was just as a diabetic, he's been through that before. And then when he went in that state, his blood sugar dropped dramatically. He just passed out. And then his supervisor, who also our client claims had been hounding him based on other violations of the ADA, just such as the was not allowed to consume snacks during his meal period. He informed me, no, I did not fall asleep. I had a hypoglycemic shock.
I thought he said he was reading. Didn't he tell the supervisor he'd been reading? Did the plaintiff not tell his supervisor that he had been reading?
Yes, I understand that during the deposition he was asked that. He had something in his hands, and I believe he was reading. And then that's where he had the station of the post. And that's where he had hypoglycemic blood sugar dropping on him. That's why he blacked out.
But he didn't tell the supervisor, that's the point. He said that he told the supervisor he was reading, not that he was suffering from a medical condition.
Well, he had been reading, and then he had this hypoglycemic shock, and that's why he informed the supervisor, no, I did not fall asleep.
But counsel, just in terms of what the employer knew at the time, because that's obviously very important to the basis for the decision to terminate, Centara's counsel says that your client never told anyone at Sentara in that moment, or as they were investigating what happened in February, he never told anyone that what had happened is that he had a hypoglycemic shock. He just didn't say that to anyone, and it's just come up now in the briefing. So can you address that?
I understand that that particular point was asked during his deposition.
No, I'm not talking about his deposition. I'm just saying, is there any evidence in the record that at the time he was found, in what the supervisor just said, he was sleeping in February at that time?
Yes.
Is there any evidence in the record that he told anyone at Sentara that what had actually happened was that he had a hypoglycemic shock?
I understand that when the supervisor confronted him, he told him, no, I did not fall asleep. I had a hypoglycemic shock.
Where is that in the record that he told the supervisor?
I believe that's on the deposition record, but I'm not mistaken. And Sandera also further knew from day one, when he had his first, not losing a job interview, it was a job orientation, he informed his Captain Carolina of all his conditions involving that arose from his diabetic condition, his
neuropathy.
There you go, sorry, that's a tongue twister. And also how that affected his ability to walk larger distances as compared to the other situated security guards. And there's also evidence, Your Honor, that he was treated differently from other non-disabled security guards. Specifically to the point, there was another employee whose name is Edimecto Gonzalez, that he according to the testimony of our client, that he had been admonished on two previous occasions for falling asleep. One was reprimanded, and the other one for falling asleep was any time he was suspended.
But counsel, wasn't that hearsay? So I think the district court can't consider hearsay evidence at summary judgment.
Well, I don't think it's hearsay because the appellant knew of this fact, and he had talked about it in the workplace, and he knew that this had happened.
Well, he didn't have personal knowledge of the fact.
I don't think so.
Counsel, a colleague is trying to ask you a question.
I'm sorry. Yes.
He didn't have personal knowledge, so the only reason it would not be hearsay is if you somehow come up with a hearsay exception. So what would be the hearsay exception?
Well, Your Honor, to be frank with you, I don't know if it is hearsay, and I wouldn't know what other exception would apply to the hearsay rule. It just goes to the fact, Your Honor, that there were similarly situated employees that were treated differently. And you need
admissible evidence of those comparators.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
And presumably you knew before the complaint was filed that you would need such,
yes,
to look for such evidence.
Yes, and that.
And then we get to the filing of the motion for summary judgment, and the plaintiff says, I can't respond yet, I need to do discovery on comparators.
Yes, that was on Rule 56.
How is that not how does the district court abuse its discretion by saying, in effect, you've had plenty of time to do all this already?
Yeah, well, the comparator evidence we sought prior to the filing of the motion for summary judgment, that information was not provided, and that's why we informed the court.
Yeah, nor was there a motion to compel filed. Nor was there a motion to compel filed.
So that's correct, Your Honor. There no motion to compel was filed. It was informed to the trial court below that this discovery was pending.
What was the? My understanding is by the time the Rule 56D motion is filed, discovery had been closed for about 2.5 months. So, just to follow up on Judge Hamilton's question, was there any basis for the delay in filing that motion?
No, Your Honor. There's no, on the record, there is none. When the motion for summary judgment was filed, we immediately requested after, you know, requesting an extension of time to respond, that is when the Rule 56D motion.
No, no, my question is, why wasn't the request for that evidence filed 2.5 months earlier, before discovery closed?
Well, Your Honor, to be honest, I don't think it was not filed after discovery. It was filed after discovery.
Why? Do you know why?
No, Your Honor, I really don't know. And the issue is, Your Honor, if we understand discovery matters aside, there's discovery, I mean, there was issues of fact. The employee claims he had a diabetic shock, and the supervisor claims he was sleeping. That's an issue of material fact, and I understand that there should be some judgment should have been denied, and the case should have been submitted to the jury for determination.
Thank you, counsel.
At this time, counsel for the appellee, please introduce yourself on the record to begin.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Juan Felipe Santos from Jackson Lewis on behalf of Centera Group defendant appellees in this case. Your Honor, I would like to start talking about the incident about the termination and appellant's allegation that was a credibility determination to be made by the district court. And the problem with that is that when Centera concluded that Rios fell asleep at work, that was not a credibility determination, but a reasonable conclusion based on the information the company had at the time of the event, and considering that falling asleep while on duty merits immediate termination as per the company's administration of conduct standard operating procedure.
Well, is there anything in the record to the effect that he told the company at some point that he was suffering from hypoglycemic shock?
No, he never did. The record shows otherwise.
Well, what about his deposition? That's what counsel points to. I didn't remember that in the deposition, but
the first time that the term hypoglycemic shock was used in this case was in the complaint. The second time it was used, it was in the deposition. Not even at the EOC level, not even when the investigation was conducted in the company, he ever raised an issue of hypoglycemic shock, in fact.
But does his deposition say he so advised your client that that is what was going on when that incident of sleep, so-called sleeping, occurred?
Well, no. In the deposition, although he mentions the word hypoglycemic shock, he did admit during the deposition that in that day, when he was confronted by Lieutenant Lopez, what he said is that he dozed off because he felt dizzy. That's what he admitted during the deposition.
So that's the whole sum of his deposition testimony?
That's the whole sum of what this deposition testimony, which is consistent of what he said both verbally and in writing during the investigation.
You didn't use the word hypoglycemic, but what about his exchange of emails with Mr. Caraballo late February 2019?
Well, in those exchanges, he never mentioned anything that relates to hypoglycemia. He just mentioned that he felt dizzy.
I'm going through health changes. I dozed off and felt dizzy.
Right.
Did not have time to reach out for help. Is that enough of a signal of a health issue?
That's not enough under First Circuit precedent. The fact that an employee mentions that he suffers from a condition is not enough to trigger any obligation under the NDA. In fact, evidence of a medical diagnosis of impairment without more is insufficient to prove a disability. So no, that was not enough. And it's his obligation to seek for help and ask the company specifically if he needed any accommodation. It was his obligation to do so. He never requested an accommodation. In fact, his failure to accommodate claim is premised on several wrong assumptions. The first one being that his doctor never recommended it, that either that he eat every certain amount of time because he admitted that his doctor never recommended that. And second, there is no evidence in the record as well that he was suffering from hypoglycemic shock or that the company needed to do something about it. The second is that he also admitted that he never requested any such accommodation. And at the end of the day, even if he did, the record does show that the only accommodation that he would have asked is to eat every 2 hours, and he kept eating during his whole job without being bothered, and that's also his admission. In fact, the person that supervised him on the day of the events was Lutina Lopez, and according to plaintiff's testimony, Lutina Lopez allowed him to consume snacks and would send him to buy snacks and consume on the post. That was the person that also supervised him on that same day of the events, who went an hour before and asked him if everything was okay. And when he found him, you know, because he stood in front of the gate watching clearly through the glass, he saw him sleeping. When plaintiff realized that Lutina Lopez was right in front of him, that he woke up surprisingly, Lutina Lopez asked him if he was okay. And he responded that he was okay. He said, "I was reading," he said, "I was writing," and he also mentioned at that same moment, according to the record and in writing, that, and it wasn't uncontroverted, it wasn't controverted by plaintiff. "Why am I going to lie? Yeah, I fell asleep. I got so much going on. So now I get fired. I've been fired from better places before." That's on the record, that's part of the investigation. He never controverted that. In fact, that same day, there was also a meeting between Lieutenant Lopez, Luis Peyot, which was a union rep, because plaintiff was a unionized employee. And during that meeting, he also admitted to falling asleep. As a result of that, Captain Caraballo, that same day, asked plaintiff by email, "Isn't it true that you said that you admitted to falling asleep during the meeting with Luis Peyot and Lieutenant Lopez? Please confirm so in writing." To which he responded that same day. "Yes, I admit dozing off after feeling sick and dizzy to both gentlemen." He never mentioned anything related to any medical condition or hypoglycemia.
I'm looking at his email from February 26th, Rios de Caraballo.
Pages 672.
672.
Mm-hmm.
And "I agree with you about if I felt sick while on duty to reach out to superiors, but with my health issues, it changes within seconds. I sometimes can tell when my sugar levels drop. In this case, I didn't have a chance to until Lieutenant Lopez saw me."
It's the last paragraph.
That's okay. I did those, you know, yeah, that's what you were quoting, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But why isn't that enough to indicate that he dozed off because he's health issues?
Well, that's not enough because, as we mentioned, he never raised it before. And at that moment, when the investigation was conducted, nothing was. The fact that he had diabetes, the fact that he has diabetes doesn't mean that he's going to suffer from hypoglycemic shock. And he never mentioned that. Yeah. And if he, according to the record, admitted to Lieutenant Lopez that he fell asleep, and then to Luis Peyot and Lieutenant Lopez again to fell asleep, and then when he tried to confirm so in writing, he didn't mention anything that he went into hypoglycemic shock or anything to that effect. He just mentioned that he dozed off, but in writing at that moment. And for us, it's based on the investigation conducted by Captain Caraballo, who, according to Mr. Rios, it's very impartial person, a Mr. Caraballo, in fact. This is another inference that there is no discriminatory animus, because according to the same actor inference, Captain Caraballo was the one that recruited him 5 months earlier. And according to plaintiff, he disclosed all his medical conditions during the job interview prior to recruiting him. So according to Sergeant Friends, there is no discriminatory animus when the same hire is the same fire unless someone, he was terminated only 5 months after his employment termination. There are cases that goes as far as 2 years applying that same inference.
Sorry, I hadn't expected the same actor inference to come up. I don't know about the First Circuit law.
Yeah,
in the Seventh Circuit, we treat that as a jury question. It seems to be that you're also arguing, if I recall from your brief, that in essence, if you've got a security guard who has diabetes that is not sufficiently controlled, then he is not qualified to perform the essential functions of his job as a security guard.
No, that's not what we allege, Your Honor. What we're saying is that according to plaintiff, he is the one alleging. We're assuming as true that he suffers from hypoglycemic shocks when there is no medical evidence about it, even though it's an ADA claim. We're assuming as true that he suffers from hypoglycemic shock that makes him doze off into unconsciousness. That's his allegation. So we say that if that's true, then he's not a qualified individual under the ADA, so he's not protected, because certainly staying awake is an essential function of the job. So if he...
Is that different from what I just asked you?
Well, if he suffers from hypoglycemia, yeah. So if he suffers from hypoglycemic shock that drives him into an unconscious state, so assuming that is true, then he may not be a qualified individual under the ADA.
Isn't that possible with every person who has diabetes? Are you arguing that people with diabetes are never qualified? I don't understand that argument.
No, Your Honor, with all due respect, I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying that not all diabetes suffer from hypoglycemic shock. One thing does not go with the other. In fact, the people that suffer from hypoglycemic shocks are the ones that typically have an insulin treatment. Plaintiff doesn't have an insulin treatment either. So. And in the record, in the medical record, there has never been any hypoglycemic shock except for his own self-diagnosis. In this case, after the lawsuit was filed. Prior to that, or even the medical record, that's why the case record in this case, the record is devoid of any medical evidence supporting any hypoglycemia condition or suffering as a result of diabetes. He never put the company on notice of such condition.
Let me just ask you a different question about the accommodation point. He has a conversation over the phone with someone from HR and a supervisor at Sentara and shares all of his medical conditions with them. And then there is an obligation to engage in an interactive process. Is it your position that just leaving a form in a public place fulfills an employer's obligation to engage in an interactive process after an employee has shared conditions that qualify as disabilities? You can just leave a form somewhere and that's it? That's all the employer owes?
Well, Your Honor, although he did disclose the medical condition during that meeting, he admitted that he never requested accommodation. What we did is just, he said that we told him that we were going to leave him a form to his doctors, that we knew what was going on with him, because he kept saying that in that meeting that he had some conditions. But again, according to First Circuit precedent, just mentioning that I have a condition doesn't mean that you're entitled to an accommodation. We were not put on notice what was the specific request he was making. So as a result of that, we did enough telling him, you have to go to your doctor, we're going to communicate with him, but he failed to engage in that. It's a two-way conversation.
So your argument is the interactive process just hadn't begun. There was no obligation on you yet because he had specifically requested a particular accommodation.
That's true, although at that moment we told him that he needed to fill out a form so that we could certainly engage with that process and certainly find an accommodation if anything was to be given to him. But again, the accommodation he was requesting, according to him, to his allegations, was not an accommodation ever recommended by any doctor.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes argument in this case.